This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by Cray. The new Cray XC30 supercomputer, powered by Intel Xeon processors, delivers on the Cray commitment to adaptive supercomputing, providing scalability across the HPC performance spectrum. For more information, visit www.cray.com/ownXC30.
This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry.
T-Platform CEO responds to U.S. blacklist.
And Dell boxes up HPC for life sciences.
Welcome to HPC Wire Soundbite for June 7th, 2013, available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Addison Snell with Intersect 360 Research, joined again by my co-host, Nicole Hemsoth, editor of HPC Wire. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning, Addison. How are you?
Doing fine, thanks. Well, I want to start by acknowledging that last week you had a very widely read story. Early in the story cycle, we were on our podcast talking about speculation of the architecture of the projected new number one supercomputer coming out of China. And then by the time the weekend passed after that, you'd gotten a lot more details on that via Jack Dungara.
Right. So Jack Dungara had just returned from China. I think members of his team were still there. And I held off for a while on publishing it because he was waiting on the newest performance number. So if you did read the original article where we talked about having some details in the system, most of those were confirmed in the newest update that we published and using some of the newest benchmark figures. Dr. Dungara actually gave us some great detail on the interconnect, on pretty much every element of the system. So if you haven't yet, go ahead and get a preview for the top 500 list. Everything is confirmed on HPC Wire this week.
Absolutely. But I think at this point, as far as our podcast is concerned, we talked about that last week. We'll hold off because I know we'll talk about it again as soon as the top 500 list is public. And besides that, you had another great article this week dealing with a different non-U.S., more Eastern system provider, as you had a fantastic Q&A with Sevleta Panasenko, the CEO of T-Platforms, where he's responding to the implied allegations or the outright blacklist from the U.S. government.
Yeah, this has been a very fascinating unfolding story, and we were privileged enough to be one of the only news outlets that T-Platforms talked to. So when I spoke with Seva via the help of some translation, we talked about a number of issues. First of all, they feel like the blacklisting is completely unfounded. And they also believe, and some might call this something of a conspiracy theory, they also believe that they were getting a little too big for their competitive britches, as it were.
Uh-huh.
The United States government stepped in, and what's happened at this point, they said, is going to lead the rest of the world that's not part of the American technology kingdom, you know, to develop their own technologies and branch out on their own, creating something of an East versus West paradigm. It's very interesting.
Yeah, well, Seva was very careful in your Q&A in terms of what he's allowed to say and what he's not allowed to say as the weights of the appeal working through U.S.-based attorneys appealing the blacklisting. But he does say pretty clearly that he sees this as being more economically motivated than politically motivated.
Right, right. And, you know, in the end, as he says, and I'm going to quote here, T-Platforms has always supported global collaboration, and all of our projects were based on partnering with major U.S. vendors. However, when we are cut out of the global technological chain, we have no choice but to go for local government support and develop homegrown technology. This sets our countries apart in the areas where they should be mutually profitable. I think that they are waving their flag a little bit and saying, look out, rest of the world. This is creating that schism economically and competitively that you should be looking out for, you should be aware of. And that's kind of meaningful news in light of the fact that the Chinese have the top system this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as for the political statement saying, direct quote, as to whether we admit that we might have been seen as a threat to U.S. national security, we'd first need to understand whether the U.S. administration views Russia as a friend and partner or primarily as an enemy. And that's where he starts to link from the notion of it being political or is it economical, saying that it's quite unusual that a company like ours would turn up in this particular list, taking this into account and also knowing competitive practices applied by certain U.S. corporations in Russia and Europe and methods they used to fight us, I couldn't dismiss the possibility of their involvement. That's where he's really implying that he thinks it's an economic competitive issue and not a political issue. And as far as East versus West is concerned, there are other multinational conglomerates even where the U.S. is deciding, you know, what how we work with Eastern companies and their governments in terms of friends and partnerships. Huawei out of China is one of the largest companies in the world, and there's a lot of discussion, not in the HPC space, of course, but just economically in terms of how we deal with Huawei worldwide.
Right, right. And, you know, the same questions are cropping up in the United States, too. And to point back to the Chinese system, the top Chinese system right now, you know, some people are grumbling a little bit about how much funding had been kicked toward Intel to develop a lot of the technology that went forward going into this top system out of China. So there, I think trade conversations are going to be a little more prominent than ever this year versus just, hey, look at what China is doing. It's different. You know, how do we compete? This is becoming a much more economically tinged argument, I think.
Well, go back to the fast forward program. Intel was awarded one of the four major fast forward grants out of the U.S. government, and then WhamCloud had one of the other, and then Intel acquired WhamCloud. So Intel's getting a lot of government funding for the development of next generation technologies, but then those are flagged as commodity parts that can be used in anybody's supercomputer.
That's right. What do you think the workaround is for this, Addison? Do you see a way? Maybe a policy change that might begin to influence some of these things?
You know, I don't on that side. I think, you know, the notion that you're going to say, well, these aren't commodity parts and therefore they can't be exported, that would be too damaging from a trade perspective to the worldwide economy. I think the bigger question then should be, should this government be buying more of them than that government? If you could regulate anything, I suppose it might be in discounts and volume, but that's, again, difficult to regulate because discounts can be hidden in transfer costs or so many other ways. Now, the other thing I'd like to think about with respect to T platforms before we move off of this entirely, which is one of the questions you asked Seva, is whether even if their appeal is successful, if it does too little too late for this company, because they must be already feeling a significant damage to their business.
Oh, right. It's hard to say that this is going to completely put them out of business, but as he mentions in his response to that question, their image has been damaged, perhaps beyond repair. And again, they've pulled out of the International Supercomputing Conference this year, in part because they understand what their reputation is, and they're taking it back.
Now, unfortunate for T platforms that this really limits their ability to participate in ISC. Obviously, Nicole, great job getting this interview with Seva, and we look forward to seeing more details as you uncover them. Let's take a quick break from our sponsor, and then we'll come back and hit our other news from this week.
The XC30 series has been designed with a holistic approach to optimize the entire system to deliver sustained real-world performance and scalability across all hardware, networking, and software. The Cray XC30 series leverages the combined advantages of next-generation Aries Interconnect, a flexible new network topology, Intel Xeon processors, integrated storage solutions, and major software environment enhancements. For more information, visit www.cray.com/ownXC30.
Okay, back from our sponsor break. Another major story we had this week that's maybe on the more positive side, on the vendor side, is Dell was unveiling some package solutions that are specifically targeting workloads in life sciences.
Right, and as I mentioned in the article, I think that they're tapping into two big trends right now. On the one hand, genomics obviously is very big business. The cost of sequencers coming down, more and more funding being thrown at more and more genomics, life sciences companies. And then also another trend that's emerging is just converging hardware to suit different verticals. So certainly life sciences, there are many, many alternatives out there from the HPC community and beyond to cater to this community.
Yeah, life sciences as a category overall is the second largest high-performance technical computing vertical market, and it's one of the faster-growing ones also, as we point out in our just published forecast data that we've been delivering to our clients. So it's natural to try to put together better solutions for that, looking for new adopters of HPC solutions. This is an area where, in particular in the genomics workflow, you do still find people who are trying to pick up computational resources that are more significant than any that they've had before. So getting a converged system like this is a nice idea to go target that.
Right. Are you guys seeing a lot of movement toward converged systems, or is it still kind of an independent cobble-your-own sort of market?
Converged systems are most important when you're recommending a configuration to someone who's on one of their earlier generations of HPC, then getting a converged system where you're saying this is a already balanced architecture for that particular workload. It has the right software. It has the right services. That is important, and I like that Dell is targeting that, and I would expect that Dell will soon be releasing other configurations for other types of workloads as well.
Right. Did you take a look at the architecture on this? It's a 32-node system. It's all strung together with Bright Cluster Manager. You have InfiniBand option, 10 gig E option.
Right. It's a single rack configuration, the 32 PowerEdge cores, 32 PowerEdge nodes, so it's 512 cores in the rack, and then the rest of the rack is full up with storage. It's 540 terabytes of storage in the rest of the rack. So, and you were saying there's Mellanox InfiniBand options, there's also Force 10 Ethernet options, and then they're bundling that with cluster management software, and it's based on Red Hat Linux 6.3.
Right, and you can go with Dell DNFS or less. So this looks like a pretty solid offering, and I made the speculation there that at $650,000, you can get a couple of sequencers, and one of these can handle supposedly 2 to 4 sequencers in terms of the data flow. So you buy two sequencers, maybe $250,000 each, one of these discounted, and you can be up and running with your own genomics business for under $1 million.
Yeah, no problem, right? And the 650K for a rack, I think that's got to be a full up price, and it's also a list price. But I think that's right in there for a configured solution for genomics in this space. If I have any concern at all, it's that what you're looking at here is a point product. And one thing we've learned in the market research business is that exact requirements are going to vary from end user to end user. So I'd like to know what kind of flexibility there is to get a little less storage or a little more memory or more nodes or fewer, or can I add this or take out that. But if I look at this as a starting point configuration, it looks pretty good. And presumably there's also the ability to go small, medium, large with this, right? What if I needed two of them and I wanted to put them together? Presumably I could do that as well.
Right. And of course that fits right into what Dell wants to do with this. They're saying that people in the life sciences industry do not want to deal with any server hassles. They don't want to have to know anything about the IT side. They want to get up and running. So supposedly, in theory, this removes the need for a lot of IT overhead.
Right. And you're dealing in genomics here, which is one of the faster growing segments. That's only one of the workflows even within life sciences. You could bring out one of these for computational chemistry, molecular modeling, the pharmacology and PKPD sorts of applications, the protein folding types of applications or protein matching types of applications. There are all kinds of different ways that you could go in life sciences, even sticking with open source software.
Right. That's why I asked you that question about convergence. It just seems like we're going to be seeing a lot of systems that are dedicated to one task. So I've seen on the digital manufacturing side, certain machines dedicated just to modeling one type of problem. And again, it's being pitched as that plug and play. Plug it in, you can get up and running. You don't have to worry about hiring, 50 people to put this together and manage.
Right. Yeah, and again, that's most interesting when you've got smaller companies or newer companies into HPC. By the time you get to a really mature conglomerate or a large pharmaceutical company, there, if they've got different systems that are islands, this one's doing chemistry, this one's doing biology, this one's doing pharmacology, this one's doing genomics, there they wind up with IT initiatives to start trying to consolidate those into a shared lab. But the idea that you could start with these more targeted systems and have it easier to adopt, I think is going to be successful.
One last point here. I think of the numbers that they gave in terms of how many genomes they can sequence in a day, you know, saying Exonex used to take, you know, an entire week to sequence. These times are getting faster and faster, and these are bringing, I think, the reality of personalized medicine closer. And these types of machines are literally going to change our world in a pretty visible way in the next 10 years.
They are, although that, I think that's the way of HPC in general. Every time any new system has come out for any purpose, there's always what used to take a day takes hours, or what used to take all week can now be done within a day. That's not the first time we've heard those messages. Messages like that have been around for decades, and 10 years from now, when there's a new thing that does genomics, they'll be comparing to this one that says this is the old clunky thing that used to take all day to do this, and now it can be done in 48 seconds.
Yeah, and you know, speaking of general messages about HPC and changing the world, I thought it was interesting that going back to that article about the top Chinese system and these systems in general, people do not pay, and the mainstream media do not pay a whole lot of attention to supercomputing. But when these articles hit the mainstream this week, which was very fortunate for us, we got some unique insight into how the general public thinks about supercomputers. And of course, there were a lot of, you know, imagine the Bitcoin mining that you could do on this system, those types of things.
Right.
But, you know, seeing, at least for an American audience, okay, seeing this Chinese system was a real wake-up call. You know, what are they going to be using the system for? Is it going to be shady? Are they going to use it to, you know, hack into American systems? So it aroused a lot of, I think, unnecessary fear or talk. But it also got people thinking, which is valuable in itself.
Well, yeah, there. Sometimes it's valuable to get people to think. Not everybody, but sometimes. And it brings out the best and the worst in people when you get comments about the Tianhe 2 Chinese supercomputer going out there. I'm you know, jesting. It is great to have the conversation around supercomputing. I wish it could go beyond, well, here's the magic number that declares this to be number one, but that's up to us in our industry to look at what's the real work being done. And as much as I'm saying, well, every new supercomputer can always do the old jobs faster, that's the point, and that's what makes HPC so marvelous, is that we keep pushing the boundary of what things we can do accelerate time to insight, time to discovery, and across all these science and engineering workloads.
Right. I can't wait to get together with the entire community in Germany coming up very soon to talk about that and all the other issues in this exciting space.
Right. We'll have one more podcast from our home offices next week. Then we'll be jetting off to Leipzig, and we'll have a couple more special ones during the week from ISC.
Right. Look forward to it.
All right. Thanks a lot, Nicole.
Thank you.
This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite has been sponsored by Cray. The new Cray XE30 supercomputer, powered by Intel Xeon processors, delivers on the Cray commitment to adaptive supercomputing, providing scalability across the HPC performance spectrum. For more information, visit www.cray.com/ownXE30.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite. Got a question or comment? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.